This Week in Radio Tech is supported by the Broadcaster's Desktop Resource at thebdr.net and by Violet Microphones at violetusa.com.
And now, our feature presentation.
Twirt.
Two bankruptcies and right before Christmas. I hate that. Plus, why aren't we using DRM? And they are going to India.
All right, calm down. He says that to everyone.
This calls for immediate discussion.
What's up, Dad?
Yeah, all your days are belong to us.
From his palatial office of important business.
Or in a choice hotel in a distant land.
This is Kirk Harnack.
Tom Ray and Chris Tobin are here, and from all the way around the world in India, it's Elliot Steckman.
You're dialed in to This Week in Radio Tech.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host, and along with us, a few co-hosts from radio stations kind of around the world this week. This Week in Radio Tech is the show that talks about radio technology, audio. We talk about RF transmission. We talk about the legal and the entertainment side of radio a bit as well, things that engineers maybe don't have any business talking about. But if you want to know about digital audio, analog audio, just how we get things done at radio stations, including internet streaming and so forth, this is the show for you, and we're glad that you're in here with us this week. On the show today, one of our unusual, or I should say unusual, co-hosts, that's Tom Ray. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Kirk. I'm just sitting here in my my Santa suit, just waiting for the holiday.
Tom, you are in the New York area, and you work with the folks at Buckley and WOR.
Yes, sir. I'm Vice President of Engineering for Buckley Broadcasting and WOR Radio, New York City's 50-kilowatt flamethrower, one of many.
And you've been around the radio business for a while, AM, FM.
A little bit of television, done cellular. Got all kinds of good experience here.
Well, also with us from New York is Chris Tobin with CBS Radio. Hi, Chris.
Hello, Kirk. Good evening, Tom.
Hello, Chris.
So, Chris, what are you doing with CBS nowadays?
Oh, let's see, six radio stations here in the market, and my job is just broadcast technologists, find technologies that help us make money and continue to stay in business, unlike some other fellow broadcasters using Chapter 11.
Yeah, we'll talk about that too, coming up. Hey, our guest this week is a fellow that I met a couple of years ago in Mumbai, India, and that fellow is Elliot Steckman. Hello, Elliot.
Hello, Kirk. Good morning.
Good morning to you. It's about 6:30 in the morning on Wednesday in Mumbai, isn't it?
Yeah, man, just gone 6:30. It's a very overcast morning here in Mumbai this morning, but we're pleased to say no snow like our northern hemisphere counterparts.
Go ahead, rub it in.
I think I'd like the snow right now, mate. It'd be nice. It'd be a change.
Elliot, you don't have the typical Indian accent. What's up with that?
Mate, far from it. I'm on the opposite pole, man. I'm from New Zealand and got booted in here about 9 years ago to start playing with the FM radio station. So, and kind of stayed, made Mumbai my home. And don't seem to be moving very far very quickly out of Mumbai. So it looks like I'm going to be here for a while.
Now, Elliot, when I met you, seems like you were in charge of engineering in the radio division of Times Radio or Times Media?
Yeah, I've done a couple of roles. I've done three roles for the radio business here in India. I originally came and was working for a software company, a US-based software company that was doing radio solutions. Occupied that for a few years and then moved out of that and also worked for the same company who has a monitoring business. We do a lot of they do a lot of their processing here in Mumbai for their ad spot monitoring business. So I helped set that up. Then moved on to work on a project which we believed at the time was one of the largest and also quickest rollouts of radio in the world, which was for an Indian conglomerate called Reliance ADAG, which purchased 45 licenses in the phase two of the FM here. And we rolled out 45 stations in around, I think it was just under 12 months, which was crazy what we did at the time, but a big feat at the end of it. And recently been working for the Times of India, the largest media group here in India that has 32 stations under the brand of Radio Mirchi. And I've been their technology consultant and still am the technology consultant today. looking at ways on, again, like what Chris said, trying to figure out how to make money out of technology.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, Elliot, we're going to be checking in with you in a lengthy fashion in the second half of the show. Of course, you're welcome to be joined in with us on the topical discussions that that we're going to have right now. And I was looking at some of the headlines in the news. By the way, we do get some of our ideas for headlines from Radio World and Radio World Online at rwonline.com. I can recommend the site and good place to find out what's going on in the radio business. One thing that I noticed, hard not to notice the headlines if you follow radio at all, a couple of big companies, well, one big and one not as big, have filed for bankruptcy protection. Citadel and also Next Media. Citadel, in the recent past, the last couple, 3 years or so, bought the ABC radio stations from Disney. And the Next Media is a smaller chain of stations, 30-something stations, I think. Gentlemen, what does bankruptcy mean for engineers and employees of these companies?
Well, this is Chris. I would say from folks I've talked to over the last year, depending on where you are in the company, it's not the end of the world. You wind up being the person decommissioning some of your assets, if that's what they choose to do. You find yourself working as a contractor with the same company. They don't pay the benefits. You have to find other means to get your health care. And that way they can keep you on, but the expense is reduced, so it looks good on the books. Hmm. I've heard that from a couple of folks.
Okay.
And then there are those that just they dissolve the department or completely just wipe everybody out. Maybe Tom has heard others, but that's definitely what I've heard.
No, I haven't heard a heck of a lot different. As a matter of fact, we are we contract with Citadel Satellite Services for the WOR radio networks, and we and they are moving ahead in cutting over to the XDS satellite platform. So that they haven't called me and said, "Hey, we're stopping this. We're on track to go up on the new platform very shortly." So.
I think Citadel's bankruptcy, their approach was to, give back or buy the investors? Somebody, they're not in the dire straits that you might think. They have a chance to turn things around.
Ah, okay.
I read that just recently. It's yes, it's filing bankruptcy. It's Chapter 11 to protect them from the creditors. But I think the creditors actually have taken control.
What it's saying in Radio World Online is that Citadel sought bankruptcy to implement a pre-negotiated plan under which it had the support of 60% of its secured lenders.
That was it, yes.
Oh, yep. Okay. The Federal Bankruptcy Court in Manhattan said that Citadel can use $36 million in cash to run its business on an interim basis. This is according to Bloomberg. Citadel listed assets of about $1.4 billion and debt of $2.5 billion in its Chapter 11 filing. Private equity firm Forsman & Little owns 29% of Citadel common stock, according to the court papers. Citadel's the third largest radio group owner, but behind Clear Channel and CBS. They've got 224 radio stations, and they produce a lot of programming for a lot of affiliates, like Mike Huckabee, Joe Scarborough, Mark Levin, Don Imus is one of them.
Unfortunately, they're tight when they bought ABC and they bought the ABC radio networks. The timing wasn't that good, because right about that time is when the bottom started falling out of the economy. So,
okay.
Kind of surprising, kind of not surprising in a way. So hopefully they'll be able to build it back up.
I guess to layman like me, Next Media is kind of in a similar strait. Next Media is going to be taken over by its junior lenders under the proposed reorganization plan. So both companies continuing to operate, maybe at a bit slower pace, but just keeping the lenders at bay and apparently in some ways making them more involved in decision-making. Yeah?
Well, they have no choice.
Yeah, yeah. that's true.
It's a nice way to put it. They have no choice, and it'll be interesting to see which decisions are made and how they go about deciding what to do.
This is Elliot, guys. What's the type of layoffs? Is it when you guys do cost cutting? When your stations are in the situation like this, do you find that it's the talent that also gets cut, or is it just the auxiliary services that get hit first, like engineering?
It tends to be across the board and a little bit from every department. It depends on what the assets are and what the goal is of the company and what they have to do to survive.
It's quite an interesting subject. We've been through quite a similar thing here in India with the economy. And what we found was that we were probably in more of a difficult situation to cut costs than what a lot of the other networks around the world were, because we're not allowed to do networking here. So we can't take one program from one city and put it into multiple cities. And one thing that we found, not only the group that I have been involved with, but many groups, because it's been a discussion around all the broadcasters, is that, you know, one of the ways to save money very, very quickly is obviously on the talent pool. And but we couldn't save money on the talent pool because we're not allowed to do networking, which made it very, very difficult for us to actually reduce the bottom line cost when you already run on the what they call the smell of an oily rag.
Elliot, does that mean that they're not allowed to do voice tracking either, which is a bit different than the networking whole program origination?
Voice tracking is a difficult one. The license agreement that the broadcasters have here is very... You can read it about seven different ways, and you know, you'll get seven lawyers in a room, and they'll all tell you something different. But the major cities where you can make the big money is that you can't take a Mumbai feed, for example, and put it into Delhi. They say it can't be real time. Maybe you can do it like a pre-recorded, but no one's actually really willing to take on the government and give it a go because there's too much money at stake at the end of the day and too much effort that's been put in by a lot of broadcasters to build their brands. So the thing is, like, you might get, like, for example, one of the networks here just dropped off one jock and just made the jocks work an extra hour on the air to try and cover costs that way. But doing network programming is just not allowed, because the whole idea of what the government wanted to try and achieve when they gave up the FM licenses was, we've got to do local radio. We want the people to know in the small towns what's going on in their town, not what's going on in Mumbai, because there's already lots of media like television that was telling the world what was going on in Mumbai, the Delhis, the Kolkatas, the Chennais. But the local guys didn't know what was going on in their city. So it was going back to the model of what early radio was like in New Zealand, I'm guessing like in the US, was where the local people knew the local celebrities and were actually trying to build, you know, its own little entertainment vertical within the city. And that's what the government's trying to do. What we're now trying to see is that that's great in hindsight, but it's actually costing the broadcaster a lot of money. And maybe we can talk about that later, because of the infrastructure costs that we have and what we need to do to actually run the business. It makes it in some cases forbidding to actually do business in there, and, you know, loss making before we even start. There's some markets that we'll never make money in, by the way.
Now, in the U.S., stations have gone through a fair amount of cost cutting already, and a lot of this was planned when consolidation really began happening in the late 90s and earlier this decade. Companies would bring stations together from a single market, or even they'd pull in some bedroom community stations, and then there became economies of scale. If you've got, you know, eight stations under one roof in let's say here in Nashville, where I am, for example, then you can begin to cut some costs by reducing the redundancy that's going on in the traffic and billing department, perhaps in sales if you want to sell the stations all together as clusters. And then engineering got some of that hit too. You know, I've certainly have friends who tell me of the salad days of engineering when they had a two stations in a market and each station had four engineers, and that's not heard of now.
Well, it's not heard of here in India either. You know, we're lucky if we have one engineer at every station. But the interesting thing is that one of the cost cutting exercises that we tried to do is that we've over engineered a lot of our stations, purely because of the infrastructure that we need to have to run the business here to make sure that our business is reliable. And one of the things that we tried to do was we tried to get three or four broadcasters to actually move into one building, because there's a couple of broadcasters that had excess equipment, and we thought, right, okay, let's see if we can do broadcasting from all, you know, from one location. But the FM license agreement doesn't allow us to. We're not allowed to share facilities for broadcast. So there's a lot of regulation rules that have really stopped us trying to save money.
Is that regulation to encourage what the government believes should be local broadcast content, or is it just misguided?
It's trying to stop. It's trying to keep back to the local the charter of keeping radio local, and not sharing content, to make sure that, if there is three radio stations in the market, you're going to have, let's say, 15 personalities instead of five personalities that are going to work on three different stations. You know, I remember one of the things I was doing back in New Zealand is that you'd voice track a 10-2 show on one channel, and at the same time you'd be doing 10-2 on another channel, or you'd be doing a voice track drive show. That's one thing that the government did not want to do here in India. They wanted to do the, you know, create personalities at the local level and give people the opportunity to be stars or, you know, to be personalities. So they were very scared of, you know, trying to bring everything together. Like, there's even a clause in the agreement that says that you can only outsource X percentage of your content. The rest has to be created locally. So, you know, they've really gone out to try and keep it as local as possible.
That's interesting, because we're talking about localism here in the United States, and you know, part of that is they want to bring it back to the local stations and get stations off the networks. And boy, with the economy the way it is right now, I don't know how we could really do that totally, you know.
Well, I don't think it matters how much technology you use at the end of the day. I think radio has got to the stage today where I don't think there's many stations out there that don't have technology of some form, whether it's a computer system that plays the music, or you're using some of the new funky IP delivery broadcast solutions, whether it's consoles, codecs, or whatever. Getting back to the local stuff is not going to be as easy as it was, because at the end of the day, the labor pool is the bit that is actually costing you the most these days. The leased line circuits have already become dirt cheap. You know, I know broadcasters around the world that deliver their program over the internet to transmitter sites as a backup, DSL type connections. I guess you guys are probably doing the same.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I can get a leased line between Mumbai and Delhi for, you know, full T1 for under $2,000 a year.
Wow.
But, you know, we're not allowed to do it. I have MPLS, a data form, into every branch that we have. We're not allowed to move, you know, even if we moved audio over that, you know, I had that for under $1,000, just over $1,000 US for 512K into every branch. But, you know, at the end of the day, I still need talent to be local. And that's the bit where it actually costs us is the talent, plus also the infrastructure you got to have at the other end.
In India, is there a differentiation between news programming and disc jockeys, or I think you call them RJs, who are introducing the songs or having a morning show? Is there a difference in how they count that as far as localism?
There is no news. We're not allowed to do news.
Oh, that's right. Okay. It's the government broadcaster that does news.
So, Tom, you guys can't open a branch here. I'm sorry, mate. But we're not allowed to do news. And that's a big debate right now. The broadcasters would love to do news, because even if you look at entertainment gossip, that can be classed as news.
Oh, my goodness.
There was a debate about 6 months ago in the office that I just happened to walk into, is that they were debating whether the traffic report was news.
Wow.
And, you know, it's just this government's come and said no news, because India is one of these cities, you know, people watch the news, they believe the news, and there's actually been some very nasty accidents that have happened because of what's gone on the television news. Now, radio, as we know, is a medium that actually goes out to a lot more people than television, and the government's just plain outright scared that if someone gets on the air and says something, you know, you could have a million people just go do something that they shouldn't be doing, for example, that on information that is incorrect. So the government's major concern is the credibility of the news. Now, let's take, for example, the Times of India, the group that I consult to. They're a news organization. They've been in the business for 150 plus years, maybe longer.
Print, they print run news, right?
Yeah, print. Yeah, okay. We do print. We do television now. We have the English leading news channel for TV. We have a business channel as well that's on TV. We have an entertainment channel. But all those guys can carry news, but we're not allowed to. And the TOI news is credible. It's a credible source. We supply it to the Press Trust of India. Reuters use us. We have a tie-up with Reuters. But the government is still not sure how well we'll control that. So there's actually a plan in play, whether it will happen or not. If news does happen, it will be in phase three, which is going to be relatively soon, we all hope, that All India Radio will supply the news content. Now, whether they say content is they're going to supply the text for us to read, or we actually supply they supply the audio, that's what we're not sure about yet.
And All India Radio, that's the government broadcaster.
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
All in, yeah, nationwide. They've got 98% of the country covered by various means, whether it's a main wave or FM. And there's also a little bit of shortwave that runs around here as well.
So if a disc jockey on a morning show talks about what happened at the city council meeting last night and how he's upset about it, that could be considered news?
That's his last show.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow. Is there anything that would happen to that to the DJ besides being fired? Or could they arrest him? Or?
No, he wouldn't get arrested. We'd lose our license.
Mm.
Oh, yeah, it's serious. Yeah, it's wow. To the extent of you wouldn't lose the license the same day, you'd go to a hearing, you'd get to debate it. 9 times out of 10, you'd get a slap on the hand, depending on what it was. But we just have a blanket rule. Don't talk about anything that comes out of the newspaper.
Wow.
Don't talk about anything that's political. Find something else to talk about, guys. And that's what's really made radio interesting because, you know, like most engineers today, we've all had a go on the radio at some stage about our lives. And I remember walking into the studio without doing any prep and all you had under your arm was the local daily newspaper. And right, oh, there's something we can talk about. There's something we've done. Yeah, we can talk about this. And there's your prep for the morning. Well, here in India, you've actually got to really go searching for prep. You know, and there's no third-party prep comedy services or anything like that to use. So you're really, you know, scraping the bottom of the barrel to find content that is non-news orientated, that's interesting 365 days a year.
So if you would, Elliot, talk for a minute about designing and building studios when you are pretty sure you're never going to be talking, you're not going to be having any news on the air.
Well, yeah, well, this is where it becomes hard and difficult. Building studios in India is not the easiest thing. I think the AdLabs rollout was easy, and that's because of the technology we put in.
Now, AdLabs is a big group. They have how many radio stations?
40. They just put the 45th one on recently, so 45 stations, yeah.
Okay, all right.
45. They, at the time when I was involved in that, I was one of the design engineers on that. There was 3 of us involved. And we decided that we needed to make it easy to install and easy to manage. And we used an IP-based protocol solution. And that actually made us roll out the stations very, very quickly. But the issue that we had was not really related to the technology of what we were putting in and how we're getting the signal there, but about the other auxiliary items that you need to build the station, aka the building, the infrastructure that was going inside the building, the quality of the interiors, and how well it was put together. And in some cases, you know, I've built radio studios out of an office that was purely an office, and then you just put some carpet on the walls. Worst case scenario, you put some egg cartons up for baffling and you get really good soundproofing. Well, yeah. I've walked into studios here in India that have got, you know, 2 feet brick walls all around them and you can still hear the guy sneeze in the next room. It's the quality of the construction. What they think is soundproofing is not soundproofing. And it's not to do with the guys that are designing the radio station, but it's the local execution of what is happening when it comes down to the local contractors that are building it. Because you've got to remember that a lot of the people that build this is unskilled labor. And these guys don't know the difference between soundproofing and non-soundproofing. You say that you want to put a baffle in and they look at you. You know, you're talking about air conditioning. You know, it's just, you pull your hair out because you can see you're spending twice the amount of money that you would anywhere else in the world due to various reasons. Could be to do with import duties. You know, we have a 21.5% import duty on every bit of broadcast equipment that comes into India. So whatever we see on a website in the US that looks exciting, put 21% on top of that, plus freight, plus insurance, et cetera, and that's the price that it costs us to get landed. When we originally started 8 or 9 years ago, there was a 50% import duty on transmission. So if you paid $50,000 for a transmitter, we were paying $75,000 before it even left the manufacturer's base.
Wow.
So those are, you know, those are just some of the things that have come into play of actually building radio stations here. But it's, you know, if you look back at the AdLab stuff that we did, we got 45 stations and all 45 are different. It doesn't matter how well you spec it out. Like, for example, the system that we used was all Cat 5 based.
It's okay to say that was all an Axia system.
Okay, great. Yeah. So we used Axia.
Okay. All right.
Throughout the network, all 45 stations of us. And, actually, Tom, your station convinced us to go with Axia. We spent a day with you guys, with Steve Church up in a few years back in New York, and that kind of convinced myself.
I remember that, and it's a great system, isn't it?
Look, man, it's the only way we could get on the air, all 45 stations in the amount of time we did. The issue that we had, though, was trying to get the guys who laid the Cat 5 cable to do it properly. And, you know, we always thought that getting a guy to run a bit of Cat 5 would be easier than finding a guy to put an XLR cable on. Oh, yeah, we could find people to put Cat 5 cables on, but suddenly we had them running in the power trenches. They might have been, the cables might have been 3 feet short. They might have been stretched. You know, you just pull your hair out trying to get this stuff operational. And you're thinking, God, you know, these guys, this equipment we brought, it's no good. It doesn't work very well. So you'd put it all out. And you'd go to the conference room and you'd set up the entire radio station. And in some cases, we had five studios. So you had five studios of access set up in a conference room, and it would work perfectly. You'd go and plug it all back into the studios, and the thing wouldn't work. All because of a couple of Cat 5 cable runs that were not great.
Compromised.
And I can give you one example of Hyderabad, which is a relatively large city here in central India. We actually ripped everything out and started again. That's how bad it was. We literally threw all the Cat 5 cable out and said, okay, guys, let's start again and let's get it properly. And
this time, be nice to the Cat 5 cable.
Oh, yeah, be nice to it. Yeah. But, you know, the guys were just running it with the power cables. And that was, again, it's education. These guys had done office networks before, but they didn't realize that we needed to be a little bit more careful when we were running audio over it. And then the other thing was, you know, one thing about working in India is that price point is always an issue. Now, I'm not saying that price point is an issue in other parts of the world, but when you've got import duties of the crazy amounts that we have, price certainly does become a point. And then you've got a technical team that will give you a specification of what you want to buy, and then you've got a purchase department that think they know better and go and buy something else. And that was also some issues that we had when we were rolling out this installation. The purchase department got the wrong switches delivered. And, you know, it's just these small things where, you know, the quality control wasn't there to make it happen. And that happens every time, even still today. You know, look, I can give you an example of an RDS encoder we've been trying to buy now for 6 months. I approve something, business and commercial doesn't think it's the right thing. Our business and commercial hasn't been to a radio station in 7 years, but they still think they know better than what the engineering team does to buy equipment. And these are some of the issues that the technical teams have today of trying to build stations here in India, because, you know, you might have a model that you want to take across 45, but at the end of the day, what AdLabs had was they had 45 stations that had the same equipment, but the infrastructure inside the building was completely different.
Ah, okay. So, were in on AdLabs at the beginning, but then you moved over to this other company, Radio Mirchi.
Yeah, I moved over to the Times of India.
And how was that different than a company like AdLabs? Bigger, smaller in some ways?
Smaller on station size, Kirk. The ENIL is by the name is the company name, Entertainment Network India Limited. It's the company name. The brand is Radio Mirchi. And by the way, Mirchi stands for chili, if you're not a hot food lover. The difference is that they have 32 stations, but they have 32 stations in very profitable markets. They are the largest revenue generator in the country today for radio, although they have a smaller number of stations because of the markets that they actually purchased in. They did a lot of research. They went for where they could make money instead of going for size like some of the other networks here in India. From a technology and infrastructure point of view, these guys actually took the different route. They were very, very cost conscious. And they didn't look at any of the new technologies that were available. There's no IP. The good thing is, though, that it is digital. It's all AES. And they use the Wheatstone solutions, the D70s and the D75s.
Yeah.
With a mixture of, in some of the smaller towns, we're down to using broadcast tool switches. We bought some Omnia 3s as the processors. You know, really, really cut down stuff, value for money, more than looking at the, what is the core technology that we want right now to put in our stations. They were keen to get a return on their investment a lot quicker. But today, I would say, after although that equipment is standing up very, very well and it works very, very well, the major issue that we have today with this technology is we can't do a lot with it. So if we want to do add stations in, or we want to change audio feeds or audio routes or something like that, it's all manual, it's all hardwired. There's no routing matrices or anything like that. So it actually makes it very, very hard to expand those stations very, very quickly, because we just don't have the infrastructure available inside them, because we actually went for the low-end model rather than the functionality model.
Elliot, you've been talking a bit about studios and rolling out a lot of studios. What about transmission facilities? Are these also under the guidance and direction and of the engineers, or is it a separate organization handling transmission in India?
Transmission's a nasty word. This is the bit that we hate about it. And this is being forced onto us. Up until phase two, which was about 3 or 4 years back, we all had our own transmission facilities. So if you had 5 radio stations in the city, there was 5 FM transmitter towers scattered across the city on top of buildings. As part of phase two, the government decided to consolidate all that into one. So we now have what we call the CTI, which is the common tower infrastructure, which is supplied by the government, but paid for by us. The government looks at the run after it, but we own it. And that's kind of been a big letdown for us. The contractor that did it is a government broadcaster. Sweet guys, really, really nice. But the quality of the installation, the quality of the construction is really letting us down. And 2 to 3 years later, even when this equipment is starting to come out of warranty, we're spending a lot of money trying to make it work again. To give you an example, we've just had to replace feeder cables at one of our transmission sites because of poor installation. One of our other sites, we were off the air for 5 days. Not us, by the way. The entire market was off the air for 5 days. Because the way that they put the connectors on the end of the feeders, water had got in, we were getting reflected power onto the transmitter, we were getting burnouts, all different types of stuff, just purely because of the construction and the installation quality of the work that was done. They've built transmission facilities that have water running through the middle of them, because they didn't build it high enough. It was a rush job, but money wasn't the issue, because every broadcaster is paid top dollar today. And that's the sad thing of what we're seeing right now, is that these facilities could have been world class. They are world class, by the way, of what they have in it, but it's the small things that let us down, and we actually spend a lot of money actually going back and fixing these things right now.
Wow, that sounds frustrating.
Frustrating, yeah. Pull my hair out, mate. I'm going gray very quickly.
One of the questions I remember I was going to ask you, Elliot, is about single frequency networks. And I was just looking at the website for Radio Mirchi, or actually the Wikipedia entry, and I noticed, yeah, it's the same frequency all over the country.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a smart idea by...
Now, this does make it easy to have a backup exciter somewhere.
No, it doesn't matter.
No,
not at all. Forget the backup exciter. Let's just forget about the poor man who lives in the mush point in between 298.3s or 297.5s or 292.7s. That's the guy that really is where we have issues right now. As much from hindsight, yeah, the single frequency is great for marketing. It looks good. It sounds great until you get into the mush point. And nobody actually took any engineering advice when they went for this. It was purely driven from a very high level that we wanted one frequency across the country, because that's what everyone thought was good. But we're actually paying for that now. Phase three of broadcasting will be actually worse, and I don't know what we're going to do, because it's going to be, because the whole idea around phase three of the FM broadcasting business here is we'll go to smaller cities again. Some of those guys already get maybe some overrun of another signal from another city. But if we put up another stick on the same frequency, you can imagine where the mush points are going to be.
Yeah.
Please remember that our big guys are running 10 kilowatt and sometimes 20 kilowatt FM transmitters. and you're going to put in a new station that's got a 1 kilowatt, 2 kilowatt, or a 5 kilowatt. So you certainly know who's going to win very, very quickly.
I should point out that in some countries they have these single frequency networks where the programming is the same on all the stations, and they may even be able to lock the transmitters together to a common reference, like a GPS satellite, with appropriate corrections, such that the areas of interference are minimized. But that's not the case here, is it?
No, well, synchronous transmission is fantastic.
Yeah, that's the word I was looking for, synchronous. Yeah. But this is not synchronous.
Far from it. I think some of the guys that do probably some of the best synchronous transmission in the world is in New Zealand. One facility that I know very well is the Radio Works, from a transmission point of view, is run by a guy called Ray Smith. He has synchronous is perfect for New Zealand. He's got a couple of markets. Wellington's a great one, where they used to have three frequencies to get the same signal across the city. With synchronous transmission, they're allowed to actually combine all that down to one and actually utilize the other frequencies for other stations. Here we can't do that because of the FM transmitter policy, where everything has to be local. So if you take, for example, we have a feed in Gujarat, which is in the west of India. We have our major station there in Ahmedabad. Then we have another station in Surat, and in between Surat and Ahmedabad, we have this little town called Anand. And Anand is the mush point between Surat and Ahmedabad. And we get calls quite regularly saying that why can't we hear radio in Anand? And Anand's a very big town, by the way. Anand would have a million and a half people, but no radio station. But they get no radio because of the mush point between the two bigger cities.
Wow. It's so different from the U.S., isn't it? And different from New Zealand, where you're from. That's just...
Oh, completely. As much as they try to say they control it, unfortunately, there's not a lot of thought that's gone into it. I shouldn't say there hasn't been a lot of thought that's gone into the transmission. There has been a lot of thought, but I think the corporate bigwigs won the battle on this one of having the single frequency, where some of the engineers who probably designed the frequencies put their hands up and said, guys, you know, this isn't going to work. But the guys who paid the bills at the end of the day won the battle, and that's how we got the single frequency license across the country.
Hmm. Hey, Elliot, with the transmitter sites, is it like over in Europe where they're all low power, or do you have some high power sites?
Oh, the power is determined by the city that you're in. It's broken up into three grades, A, B, C, and D. Oh, sorry, five grades, A+, A, B, C, and D. A plus and A, so A plus can run 20 kilowatts. An A city can run 10. A B city can run, I think, 10 kilowatts, actually. And then a C and a D can run anywhere between 5 kilowatts and 2 kilowatts, depending on the city and what's around. So the government actually tells us how much we can do. So the biggest transmitter we have today is Mumbai, Delhi, Kolkata, Chennai, which all run 20 kilowatts. The transmitter can be 20 kilowatts, but in Delhi we can only run 10 kilowatts because the common tower infrastructure at the time that was built was only built to handle 10 kilowatts. So we actually have a 10 plus 10 standby.
Hmm. Interesting.
And there's two common tower infrastructures in Delhi, the old broadcasters and the new broadcasters, excuse me, and the new broadcasters can actually run 20 kilowatts because their infrastructure has been designed to handle that.
And how, if you put a studio in one location, the transmitter's on the mountain or the transmitter's up the road, what do you do for an STL over in India? Is it like here with a T1 or a telephone service, or do you actually have STL transmitters, or how's that work?
But Tom, that's a great question. And this is the issues that we have right now. It's trying to get a reliable STL link. I don't think we care what it is, as long as it is reliable. For example, out of New Delhi, to our STL, we have five, to our transmitter, we have five STL links. And the only reason we have five is because all five of them are unreliable. And then we have an audio matrix at the other end that just sniffs for live audio, and it just flips between whichever one's working. We have a couple of lease lines from, two telcos, and they're delivered on, fiber, and we get that terminated on Ethernet into, we run the Harris Intraplex in New Delhi. And then what we have is we have a satellite uplink downlink to go, believe it or not, 20 kilometers down the road.
Oh, wow.
So We uplink 128K audio, and then we downlink it down the road because if the fiber goes, we need to have something else. And then we have two RF links, which are, by the way, 2.4 gigahertz Ethernet links that we have across the city as well. That's in the unlicensed band. So anything can happen with those. One's MPLS, one is tries to be point-to-point with a hop in between. But again, they can spend more time down than they do up because of the unlicensed band. Getting anything that is in the licensed band here is very difficult because of the paperwork that you need to go through and actually do. Delhi's the great example. That's the biggest market for one of the biggest markets for radio. So that's why we invest so much in the STLs to try and keep it up and running. Ideally, we shouldn't have satellite to go 19 kilometers down the road. But we do. I mean, we do that in three or four locations because of the reliability, the unreliability of the other solutions that are in the market. Ideally, what we should be running is we should be running one lease line and one RF link.
Yeah.
We try and do that in some markets, to be honest with you. And we do get away with it because there is some cities that have pretty good infrastructure, or the STL link that's in the 2.4 gigahertz band isn't as populated, so you don't get as much interference. But the problem you have when you look at fixed line solutions, like whether it's a lease line or a DSL connection or whatever it is, a DSL is not very big here, by the way, because the copper infrastructure just can't handle it because it's that old. So most of the stuff is actually fiber. And if you buy from one supplier, usually 9 times out of 10, the other supplier that's in the city will have the cable in the same duct. So if you got young Rahul that's out one early morning that wants to get his ditch digger out and start digging up the road, 9 times out of 10, you'll lose both your fiber links because he's just put the backhoe sort of through the fiber, not of one telco, but of two telcos. So that's why we try to avoid. And it doesn't matter if you put, you'll say to the telco, okay, I want one cable to go out to the left of the building, I want one to go to the right. And they'll say, no, we've just got one trench that goes one way. And you know when that happens that something's, that it's not going to be great. So these are the issues that we have, and it can take days to get an STL line fixed.
I bet
there's no, like in the metros, the major cities, it's pretty good. Touch wood, actually. We have an SLA on most of our stuff of around 4 hours, and the telcos adhere to that. It's when you get out to the regional cities, yeah, that's when you start to have troubles. And a lot of the times we're actually using the government telco because other guys that have the infrastructure, they go home at 5 o'clock, man. Trying to get anything out of the government telco after 5 p.m., you might as well just turn the radio station off, man. It's just too hard. Literally too hard.
And programming-wise, Elliot, over there, like up in Canada, if there's a music station, they have to have a certain percentage of their programming to be Canadian artists. Is it something similar in India, or does it have to be all Indian artists, or...?
No, we don't have any content, any rules like that, Tom, to be honest. What we do have, though, is we have, depending on the music company and the music agreements that you strike, you might have one company that says, hey, you need to have play 30% of our music across the entire day, or you need to play 10%. So the content quota system can be there depending on the music label that you've got to deal with, or whoever has the biggest catalog. But there is no restriction on the music that you play. There are stations that play English music, full English music. There's a couple in Bangalore that do that, and a couple in Goa. There's a couple of stations here in Mumbai that toy with English in the odd hours, like late night. But there is no set rule that you need to play so much Indian music, or the regional dialect that you broadcast in, which is actually quite good, because that's, I think if it got down to that, would be actually pretty. Our business would be very hard to run.
Oh, it sounds hard to run, seeing as you can't do news and you have to be really careful about what you say because that could be considered news. So, wow, you're right.
So, man. Elliot, do I understand that broadcasters have agreements with the record companies as to how much of their music they're gonna play throughout the day?
Yeah, some record companies, yeah.
But that, we were talking, actually just before the show, you were talking about music licensing. And here in the U.S., we've had, occasional squabbles about music licensing. And you know, the fact is radio stations pay some music licensing clearinghouses like ASCAP or BMI or CSAC. for the right to play the music, and this money goes to the composer of that song of that music. Lately, we've just had more talk about making radio stations also pay the performer of music. So now it looks like radio stations will have two bills to pay to some other music licensing companies. But you told me in India it's a bit different, and I think the rates. I was in India back in November at a conference, the AROI conference, and that was a hot topic: is how incredibly high the rates are that stations have to pay to play music. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we pay roughly in US dollars anywhere between $27 to $28 an hour, a needle hour, by the way, not an hour, needle hour to play music. So you do the numbers, times that by, let's say if you did 16 hours of music across a day, times that by 31, for 31 days in a month, you're paying a hell of a lot of money. I think our average bill, by the way, per station, I'm just doing some quick calculations here on the calculator, is about close to 12,000, US dollars a month per station is what we pay.
Chris, you're in New York. You've got both, talk stations and music stations.
Yes.
Now, the talk stations, you probably don't pay much for music licensing, except for maybe a theme song.
No, yes, it's very different. And the news stations, we're exempt to some degree because of the content that we're doing.
Now, in the U.S., we pay as a percentage of the gross income of the radio station. Chris, do you have any idea what some of the music stations in New York City pay for music licensing?
Oh, wow. Actually, they just revamped it because now it's a larger corporate approach. I don't think they're taking it by individual stations. Yeah, they revamped it about 2 or 3 years ago. Well, the average station, I think, was it 30 million a year for the FM music stations, 35, so a percentage of that. But then, as a larger corporation which has so many other divisions that also need music, I believe they made some kind of blanket deal some time ago.
I think we're talking on stations that are financially very successful, like New York stations and L.A. stations. At least, I don't know if they're netting a lot of money, but they certainly gross up in the tens of millions of dollars per year. I would guess those stations are paying around $1 million or more per year for music licensing.
Yeah, easily.
I would think so, and maybe up in the $4 and $5 million area. My little radio stations, I have two in Mississippi. I mean, we gross very little money, and we probably have to end up paying out $200-$400 a month.
This way, tell the tax man, right, Kirk, you don't do a lot of business at all, right?
we have to turn over some numbers to them. I'm not sure how that works, but we have to turn over numbers to them. And unfortunately, it's based on gross, not net. So that as a corporation, we can lose money, which we try to do every year, but we lose money, and we still have to pay. I mean, those guys have to get paid, just like the electric company or the gas company. So they don't make money from our profit. They make money from our gross. But in India, you say it's a bit different. It's a flat fee per hour, which I guess maybe in the big cities, that's not such a big deal. It may be a very good deal. But if you're in a small town, How can you afford to pay $27 per hour?
The small town doesn't work, dude. As I rightly said, there are some stations that you do not make money from.
Yeah.
Because of this and the high costs. You know, I know a couple of stations that run. Yeah, just to give you. Let's just talk about cost for a moment. We'll come back to music, but just to give you what happens here is that the biggest cost is your transmission, your license fee that you pay to the government, and that's a percentage of your turnover. And if you don't make that much, they have a minimum amount that you need to pay. The second thing is your music licensing fees. The third thing is to the guy that owns the generator, because in some markets we literally run on generators anywhere between 10 to 12 hours a day, not at the studio but also at the transmission site, because of the power. There's no power in the state, or there's the shortage of power. So there's crazy costs like that. But back to the music royalties, yeah, it doesn't matter where you are in the country, that is the fee that you pay. And that's what the broadcasters are actually trying to fight right now. Is they're saying, come on, guys, you know, you look at the world standards of what goes on out there. You know, America, you pay a percentage. We're keen to pay a percentage. What's this fixed fee of $27? Even if you got it to half that, go on, man, everyone would be really, really happy. But, you know, why can't we be on the same stage as what the international guys are? The problem is, it's the way that music is produced here. It's not like the way that you guys do it in the US. The music here is all based around films. There is no, you know, you're talking 2% would be individual artists. We don't have the Madonnas of the world. We don't have the Lionel Richies. We don't have the Beyoncés. We have films. And what you do is you get a bunch of people to create music for a film. And what happens is the film company then owns the rights. So none of the money goes to the guy who played the piano or who wrote the lyrics. They get a fixed fee from the film company to say, okay, here's your $1 million. Go away. Leave me alone. Anything that happens with this music, we own and we get the profits. Thank you very much. That's how it works. So the guys that are actually controlling the music royalty today is not the music companies, but the guys who actually own the rights, which happen to be the movie companies. And they're saying, guys, you know, this is what the music costs. So what happens is that they go out and they buy the music, they integrate it into the film, and then they split up the rights packages. Nowhere different here in India than everywhere else in the world. So they've got the satellite and TV rights. They've got the film theater rights. Oh, then we've got the digital rights. And by the way, that's broken down into mobile, web, interactive voice services. And then what you have is you have, oh, okay, there's radio stations, okay? So someone else has the rights. So they're breaking it down and they're trying to make money from all these verticals. One of the verticals that they see is radio, and that's how we get jacked, because they're the guys that have probably paid huge amounts of money for the music rights, because the movie guys probably sold them to someone else who's then got a distribution. There's just too many hands, I believe, in the chain that, you know, that want a bit of the pie. And then they all think that radio is really, really bad because radio has killed music sales. And, you know, it's the same story that's been going on for 10 years around the world. It's no different here in India. The only thing is that the money that we spend as a broadcaster today is 1,000% more expensive than what you guys pay in the US or anywhere else in the world. And we're trying to get that change. We're in the Supreme Court right now with the Copyright Board, trying to get the government to overturn it, to say, guys, hey, you know, just give us a fair game. And that's been going on for 6 months. It's been adjourned. We're going back in March. You know, it's a continuous fighting battle when it comes to music royalties.
Huh. Wow. So, Elliot, when I met with you at your office at the time, you were at Radio Mirchi.
Yep.
I got the sense of, you know, a corporate office, and you're over a lot of engineers at that point, and you're directing what they do, and you're looking at new technologies for that company. What is it, you know, for an average engineer in the U.S., how would we compare what we go through to with what an engineer in India goes through? I've been to a transmitter site in India. It was at the top of what seemed to me to be a shaky apartment building. And by the way, I could go out on the an area just outside where the transmitter was, look up, the roof was open at that point, and there's the FM antenna, and if I could jump real high, I could touch it, and this thing was putting out 20 kilowatts.
I know the one you're talking about.
It amazes me that, well, for example, when I visited some stations there, Ad Labs one of them, you guys one of them, Radio City, and I was really impressed with the talent on the air, and with the engineers that I've met with, frankly, I've been really impressed with them. They are doing a lot of things right, but there's so much in terms of basic infrastructure that's, I guess, out of control of the radio engineers. Things that he has to farm out, like interconnect with a telco, or a fiber link, or, like you said, wiring up a studio that have, it, some of these things have got to be frustrating, the level of quality that's available when you know that it's going to cause problems and you know you could do it better yourself. Kind of help me understand what engineers are putting up with.
The engineering guys is an interesting area. I think what happens today, and it's not to be taken the wrong way, but I've seen this in various parts of the world, and India is no different, where there are some companies out there that don't value what engineering actually does. And that's probably the biggest frustration that the broadcasters have here in India today, is that they don't understand what engineering does. They believe that once you put it on, you don't need to do anything. What there's no moving parts in radio. It's all solid state. Why do we need engineers? Once it's plugged up, it works. I'll just get an IT guy to look after this. I think I can tell you for a fact, out of the 32 engineers that we have across the country, I would believe only 10 of them could probably wire an XLR connector. The rest of them were all IT guys. They wouldn't have seen a soldering iron in their lives. And I can tell you for a fact, when the radio stations actually went out and started hiring so-called radio engineers, the guys that got the jobs were guys that used to produce music. They were board operators. They were production guys that had become engineering guys. And you'd be telling them, okay, well, we need to get this XLR wire from here to there. And they'll go, oh, well, we can put the wire in, but we don't know how to wire it up. So it's also the skill set that is available. You know, but saying that, though, over the time, we've got some really good engineers across the country that have come from either an IT background or have come from an audio background that have wanted to do a little bit more about engineering. But you would still struggle. Like, I can tell you today, if we needed to get a transmitter fixed in a rural area, we would have to probably call All India Radio and get one of their engineers to come across, because they're still training the engineers in the ways of how to fix the traditional transmission or the consoles down to an IC type resistor level. None of our guys would be able to pop the lid and change an IC or swap out a component on a PCB or anything like that. And that's just not at our network. That's it across all the networks across the country. And they're probably more IT based today. But the biggest thing is right now is from if you look at that category as a career option, there is no growth as being an engineer here in India, because everything's set up. There's no new channels coming up. When the new channels come, it's, you know, everyone will be doing plug and play. It will be all built off site. It will turn up. We'll just plug it all in, and you'll be on the air. They'll bring some programming people in to get it up and running, teach people how to use it, and that's it. And we can hopefully all control it from a central location. So the role of an engineer today is more of becoming a babysitter than an actual physical hands-on soldering iron guy type role.
We're going to be out of time on the show here shortly. I've got a question. I'll tell you what, let me back up for a second and ask if Tom or Chris have any further questions of Elliot before I move on to a question for all of us.
Well, I'm good.
Actually, I had a question to be an engineer on a station in India. Is there any licensing required, or what's the? I'm serious. Or do you just show up with your bubble gum and your paper clips and go for it?
Option two, my friend. Option two.
And you may not need the bubble gum.
Yeah. Look. Bring your chewing gum, your bubble gum, and your lunchbox, mate, because that's the qualifications you need.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no qualifications required at all.
I must have met some of the top guys in India then, because I did meet some guys who seemed to have a clue.
Oh, there's some guys around. Like the guys in the big jobs, the top jobs, yeah. They've got qualifications. They might come from a telecom background, an industry like that. But, you know, when you get out to the rural sectors, these guys wouldn't even know what a soldering iron is. Mm. I don't even believe that some of our sites would actually have a soldering iron.
So here's my last question. Actually, it's a question from a listener. James Johnson wrote in. He's a amateur radio operator, KC5, JPZ, JPZ, JP Zulu. Anyway, James asks a question about digital radio and how we in the U.S. we ended up picking or going with the Ubiquiti HD radio system. And sounds like James is in favor of DRM. And personally, I like DRM too. Here's what he asks. He says, I'd like to hear how anyone can justify using Ubiquiti Digital HD instead of advocating DRM. Ubiquiti is proprietary and expensive, while DRM is open. If Ubiquiti ever gets to be the sole digital system and the FCC decides that we must go digital, the FCC license would become a pre-approval for the licensing authority, Ubiquiti. If you don't if you don't pay Ubiquiti, then you might not be able to broadcast, is what James is offering up. Hey, I got to play with some DRM a few years ago thought this is a heck of a good idea. Why don't we have DRM in the broadcasting scenario in the U.S.? Why do we have Ubiquiti's HD? Tom, I know you're an HD user there. What are your thoughts about James' comments that he'd rather use something open like DRM?
In a way, I would somewhat agree, because I kind of like the open source stuff, but. In this case, I think there were a lot of politics involved with it, because, originally we were talking, and this comes up on a lot of message boards about, why don't we, why don't we have a separate band like or go to separate channels like they did for digital television? Well, been there, done that. The FCC said no. Mm-hmm. It was a political decision on their part. And be honest with you, I don't know why we don't have DRM and why we have the Ubiquiti system, but it is what it is, and it's up to us to make it work.
Chris, so. Is this something that crosses your mind? Have you talked about this with other people?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Actually, I've never been a fan of the USDA radio and the Ubiquiti and the approach, and I don't like the idea of having to pay a licensing fee for the way we're doing broadcasting, but that's just my personal opinion. And from what research I've done in years back when Eureka 147 was on the horizon, a lot of the reasons why we have now the Ubiquiti platform, but you know, the earlier version of it, is because of the lobbying done by the broadcast ownership, broadcast large groups. I remember going to several forums in Washington and listening and watching all the broadcasters scream and holler about the fact that a separate band would level the playing field, and they just can't have that. I mean, that's literally what was said in the public hearings, and it just continued in that direction. And that's where part of the L band disappeared and why it doesn't happen. I think definitely should be open source. The way these things are going in technology, I mean, you can take a software-defined radio, put it in a computer or standalone box, 12 kilohertz IF out, take a decoding software for DRM, and you're now decoding DRM. I mean, you couldn't get any simpler than that. And you pay $50 for the license fee.
Yeah. I want to hear Elliot's thoughts about digital radio in India, but first, my own take on why Ubiquiti HD Digital has become a standard in the U.S. as opposed to DRM. Because there isn't a strong enough unified DRM front to get radios out there. I mean, there aren't any DRM radio. Maybe there's one out there somewhere, but there's not a choice of DRM radios out there. People can't. You can't go to the store. You can't go to Radio Shack. You can't go to your stereo store and buy a DRM radio. But you can buy an Ubiquiti HD radio or one that's licensed by them. And there's 60 or 100 models or more. Of HD radio. So Ubiquiti, despite what we don't like about paying for a licensing fee or a get started fee, an annual fee, they have gotten a lot of radios out there. And that's
a lot because of the support from the original founders.
Yeah.
And the lobbying that took place.
Ah.
DRM had the same option.
Yeah.
You could do a lot with DRM in outside the United States, but the lobbying group forced them out. The FCC did not have an open and proper technology notice a public referendum or the NPRM to really offer up, competing technologies. There was a lot of political fighting.
Yeah.
And, all the guys at Ubiquiti and everybody else will tell you otherwise, but if you read a lot of the public documents over the last 10 years, you'll notice there's a pattern and there's nothing. Because for some reason, here in the United States, cellular telephone has three different formats and nobody seems to argue over that.
Yeah.
The FCC didn't say you can only do CDMA W2000.
Yeah.
No, they didn't.
No.
When it came to digital radio, they said only one thing.
So, Elliot, in India, all of your broadcasting is analog, right?
Yeah, we're doing the old analog FM still. The government's turned around and said that they will go DRM in the Commonwealth Games, which is here, 2010, will be broadcast in DRM. I don't know who's going to listen to the damn stuff on DRM, but it's going to be broadcast in DRM. I think unofficially, off the record, and this is my personal view, and I'm going to state that right now, is that I would believe that the Ubiquiti format would probably be the winner in this market because of the infrastructure that is already in place and the ease it would be to get it on the air. And also radios that are in the market. Is it the right technology? No, I'm kind of probably agreeing with Chris. Yeah, I don't know. DRM's much better. It's easier, the license fee. But from a infrastructure point of view, how much extra would it cost me to get it on the air? I think we did some quick calculations recently. It costs about $25,000 to get the Ubiquiti iBock up on the air. And then you've got a selection of radios. The biggest thing that would actually hold digital radio back here in India is the receivers. You guys have 60 or so receivers right now. Which is great. And, I've seen there's been many people that have come through, canvassed it. You know, Chuck Kelly from, who's now at Nortel, is a big fan of the Ubiquiti stuff. Every show that I go to, I listen to it and go, wow, yeah, this would be really, really nice to have in our market. The problem is we can't get it on a cell phone right now. Or if we can, it's too expensive. And a lot of the radio listening that's done in India is done on mobile phones through the FM chip. Until the technology, whatever it is, DRM, DAB, or the ubiquity stuff, until they get it onto a mobile phone, guys, don't even think of coming to India. And you've got to get it to a price point that the guys can afford to put it in. Don't come and tell us that the chip's going to cost us $20. Well, you know, FM radio on a mobile phone these days is down to 50 cents per chip, not even lesser. That's where you guys have got to be if digital is going to work in India. I don't think we will see digital in India for at least another 5 years.
All right. Guys, we're pretty short on time now. We've been at it for a little bit more than an hour. I got a real quick product pick of the week, something I ran across called the Bud Trap. You have an iPod and you wrap your little headphone, your earbuds, a cable around the iPod, and then it gets tangled up later. Well, the Bud Trap, and there's a link to it in the show notes. Actually, it's budtrap.com. We'll keep those cables in place when you're not using your iPod. I thought that was kind of cute.
Well, I was hoping you were going to tell me it was going to keep my beer can in place. what am I supposed to do when we're recording this podcast? Bro? Come on.
Leave it to Tom.
How did you come across this?
I don't know. Where did I come across it? I think it may have been on the Radio World Online site.
My goodness.
You should ask Kirk how he comes across lots of things, man. The conversation.
I have, and I've you know what? I'm not going there in this public room. Oh, I'm just asking about that meat in Argentina, or what was it?
That's right.
South American. No,
Argentina, where they serve meat with their meat.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, hey, Elliot Steckman, thank you so much for being with us, getting up early to join us from Mumbai, India.
Pleasure. Look forward to doing it next time, if there's a next time. Hope I've passed the grade.
I hope there will be. We enjoyed having you on very much. Thanks kindly. Let's see. Chris Tobin from New York, thanks for joining us as well, taking an hour out of your night.
Oh, no problem. You're quite welcome. I look forward to it. Actually, I enjoyed the talk of Indian broadcasting. It's fun to hear how others around the world do what we've taken for granted for the last, 100 years.
Yeah, and you appreciate what we have when you come back and you know, after seeing broadcasting somewhere else. And sometimes you see things that do impress you. You know, like a morning show with a million listeners. In one market. Tom Ray, thanks for joining us as well.
Well, thanks for having me, Kirk. It's a lot of fun, and happy holidays.
Thank you, and Merry Christmas to all of you and our listeners as well. Hey, next week we'll have another show, another This Week in Radio Tech. I believe our guest next week will be Scott Feibusch. He is the guy that has the calendar every year featuring naked broadcast towers. Different one every month.
We're going to have to give him a phone call, though, to make sure he can get his computer hooked up.
Yeah.
Well, he's a man of very few words, maybe one or two at a time.
But I'll tell you what, we'll go ahead and put his website in the show notes in case you want to get that last-minute Christmas gift. And I do mean last-minute. You could order a catalog from Scott.
Still international shipping?
I don't know. But, hey, next – you know what?
He will.
If Scott will send me a couple, I'll bring some on the flight with me when I come to Delhi at the end of January.
Cool, man. Look for that.
Yeah. Here you go. I've got mine right here. I ordered mine a couple weeks ago.
Oh, you have your 2010 catalog?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I close the door when nobody's around, and I sit here and ogle the pictures. It's great. No, Scott's got some great...
This is an audio-only podcast.
Scott's got some great pictures in here. He really does.
Are there any flashing tower lights?
This time around, no, but he did have one a couple of years ago where he had the Armstrong Tower at night.
Uh-huh.
That was kind of cute.
Yeah. I'll put a link in the show notes. Guys, thank you very much. We will catch you next week on another edition of This Week in Radio Tech.
That's all the bandwidth we can pill for this week. Another tort has propagated, and all the transmitters and audio equipment live happily ever after, thanks to the handsome engineer and his kind, benevolent care. We'll be back next week.
Lord willing, and the creek don't rise.
This Week in Radio Tech.
Subscribe to iTunes and you'll never miss a show.
Search for This Week in Radio Tech in the iTunes Store. Soliciting is strictly encouraged. If you liked today's show, tell a friend. If you didn't like it, we were never here. Kirk Harnack's wardrobe provided by the Salvation Army and the Red Cross Disaster Relief Services. Hair and makeup provided by Penny Lopez Garcia Hernandez Weinberg.
He's unique, wouldn't you say?
I just want to get it over with.
This ends this transmission.
Tango, Whiskey, India, Romeo, Tango.
Signing off. Okay.